Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Rarious Fundamental Podcast, episode 49. I'm so lucky I'm a star. No one really cares. What's up, Internet? This is the Rarious Fundamental Podcast, episode 49. I am Ray Morali, also known as Ray Ray, and joining me as always, the greatest storyteller of all time, Adam Jacoby. What's up?
Not a whole lot, man. We're coming up on the big 5-0 pretty quick. The silver anniversary of the podcast, I guess you would call it.
I guess so. I'm trying to strategically plan this episode because I have no idea when I should do it or if I should wait for the planned guest to be free, because that could be 2 weeks from now still, so I don't know yet. So but in the meantime, for episode 49, it's the other Adam Ryder from ESPN.com as our guest, and he had a huge tournament of his own going on for March Madness. So what's up, Mr. Reisinger?
How's it going? We're doing great here in March. Couple days left of this college nonsense, and then we can get to the real real important stuff, which is the NBA playoffs starting in about 3 weeks.
Yes, sir. So did you guys watch the tournament? I mean, I watched a few games of the tournament. Did you guys?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, one, there were three teams from the state of Iowa in it.
Yes.
Which was a big deal. And they all had their own moments of excitement in the tournament, one way or another. So that was fun. And there is still a native Iowan out there on the court, even though all the Iowa teams are gone, and that is North Carolina point guard Marcus Paige from Marion, Iowa, ACC Player of the Year, and hopefully, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that he'll be able to hoist a trophy, because if a team from Iowa can't be champions, then a kid from Iowa deserves it, at least, I think. That's very provincial thinking on my part, but I stand by it 100%.
That's fine. Mr. Reisinger?
I have watched shockingly little of this tournament, considering that, you know, I get paid to cover sports. I managed to plan a vacation for the first week of the tournament, and I mean, I watched a couple games, like, literally on my flight out to California, and didn't watch any while I was out there. And then the second weekend, I had one day where I was at work and covering the games, but then I've been sick the past couple days and haven't watched any basketball, so yeah, I've watched maybe four total NCAA tournament games. It didn't help that I filled out four brackets this year, and in two of them, my champion went out in the first round, so I was just like, yeah, I'm so done with this nonsense.
When was the last time you actually watched, like, the entire, like, college basketball season? Because I think the last time I've done it myself was 95, 96. It was Iverson and Camby and all those guys. Mm-hmm. That was the last time I actually watched, like, the entire college season, you know, because now it just gets to be tougher and tougher to watch college basketball, especially since I'm covering the NBA a lot more, obviously.
Tougher just in terms of, like, the logistics of it, or because of the widening divide in quality, or just that since there's a four-year, like, there's necessarily a four-year tops turnover rate that you just can't keeping track of all these guys from a team that you're not, like, emotionally invested in? Like, what's the hard part about it?
I think it's the first two things, actually, you mentioned, the logistics of it and the widening gap of quality. Like, you really notice the difference once you watch so much NBA. Uh-huh. And I've always watched a ton of NBA. You know, I always have. It's just that, you know, once you cover something closer, and then you notice how bad the college game is, in terms of quality, then you tend to not stick with it as much, I think. So.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, the thing of it is, to me, like, where you notice it the most, aside from just the athleticism gap, because, you know, there's no Greek freaks in college ball right now. There's just not. But I the big difference to me is in the NBA, they knock down open shots. Like, if you leave a shooter open, 70-80% of the time that thing's going in, because they're good at that now. And in college, someone gets an open shot, and, you know, for like 60% of the guys on the roster, you're like, oh no. You know, like, they're open for a reason, because everybody knows they can't hit from 20 feet. And so you see these, like, otherwise well-orchestrated plays, and then they end up with an open shot like they do in the NBA, but then it's like, oh, here we go again. You know, it's Steve the forward, and he can't make that, and then Steve the forward doesn't make it, and then that's how you end up with a 63-59 game. That's how college ball is. And yeah, once you get used to the NBA, you're like, wait, why am I watching this? This isn't like, if I don't care about the name on the jersey, then what? Why am I doing this?
I think you've identified a key problem with college basketball, in that there are a lot more guys playing college basketball named Steve than there are guys in the NBA named Steve.
Steve the forward.
There are only two active NBA players who go by Steve. There's Steve Blake, who somehow is still an active NBA player, and Steve Novak, also, same applies. And then there's also Steven Adams, who I think, because he's a Steven, doesn't count.
No.
And although, I feel like every other college basketball player has some guy named Steve, where when he gets the ball, you're like, oh no, this isn't going to end well.
Right. I can name, like, three players from the Hawkeyes where you're like, no, don't shoot. They left you open for a reason. And those people would never in a million years, like, I can name one person in the NBA who that would apply to, and it's Jason Kidd. You know, that's it. So that's the big difference to me. Also, I guess I didn't realize that Steve Novak and Steve Blake were different people.
I'm also shocked that there are only two Steves in the NBA. For some reason, I thought there were more than that. But in any case, like, yeah, like, I'll always watch a tournament. There's always excitement in the tournament. And, you know, this is where I get tired of, like, all the college basketball fans are like, yeah, college basketball is better than NBA, see? Whatever. I'm like,
no, it's not a competition. That's what hockey fans do. You know, you never want to be a hockey fan. I mean, like, it's okay if you like hockey, but you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be hockey bro. That's the one thing you never want to be.
You never want to be the hockey man so tough guy.
Yes. Please like my sport.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And the only reason, this is the thing that, college basketball fans, show off. It's like, hey, the tournament's exciting, so therefore it's better than the NBA. Like, no, that's not even the point here. Like, you should watch the quality of the college basketball. It's like, oh, the NBA doesn't play defense. Like, come on, really?
Really?
Like, you obviously haven't watched an NBA game.
Right. They had to change the rules in the NBA because they were too good at defense in the late 90s. Like, this is, oh no.
Yeah. And it's really good right now too. It's like the way defenses have been structured in the NBA. It's like, it's even better now, I think, in a way, you know, because now it's like they play defense on the string and everything like that. So, but you know, college basketball fans just don't get it. It's like, oh, our sport's better. They're just blind towards their loyalty towards it.
Well, they just like different things. They're looking for. They know that the athleticism isn't nearly as good. They don't care. They want to, like, watch games that they were going to when they were 6 years old, and apparently they like it better when it's 19-year-olds with no future in the NBA, instead of, you know, 19-year-olds like Rudy Gobert, or maybe he's 20 now, but you know what I mean, like,
right?
Or where, you know, if somebody changes teams, it's rare and weird. Whereas in the NBA, it's like something that happens to you four times in your career. So people just are turned off by the notion of sportsmen as successful millionaires, multi-millionaires. Like, maybe that's it. But, like, any coach of a decent team is making millions a year in college basketball. And, like, but that's okay? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Reisinger?
There's so many structural and philosophical problems with the NCAA that we could do an entire series of podcasts on it and not even scratch the surface. But I just feel like if you like college basketball better than the NBA because you like the pageantry and you like the one-and-done format and you like the excitement of that, that's perfectly fine. That's a personal choice, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's totally acceptable. But if you're going to sit here and tell me that the actual on-court product is better and then prove it by comparing a highlight reel of Grayson Allen slapping the floor and diving all around to get loose balls, comparing that to a vine of James Harden not playing defense and tell me, see, that's so much better. Like, that's just not. Just stop.
Right.
No. That's not what's happening here. Because then I'm going to pull out a highlight reel of college basketball players missing wide open 15 footers and games ending 60-53 and compare it to a vine of Stephen Curry draining, you know, half court shots with no effort and see, like, now mine's better. Right. Congratulations, I win.
By the way, I hate the kids that slap the floor, man. Seriously, I've always hated that.
My favorite moment from this college basketball season, and I can't even remember the teams involved or the guy or whatever, but it was the dude who went down to slap the floor and his guy just blew right past him.
Yes, I remember that.
It was Nebraska versus Ohio State.
Yes, thank you.
And the guy who slapped the floor, Jayshon Tate, re-aggravated a shoulder injury and was out for the year after slapping the floor.
It was
one slap is what took him out.
Oh, wow!
This is why college basketball is inferior.
Yeah,
that would never happen in the NBA.
On many levels. Many levels, it would never happen in the NBA.
I hate floor slappers so much. Like, I saw it on when I was playing pickup when I was way back in high school, and I saw someone doing it, I was like, what the hell is he doing? Right? So, and there's also the time where I was playing League, and, I just got basically, shoehorned into, my friend's team to play League, and I didn't really like him too much. And then, the guy, like, slapped the floor after he scored a basket, and we're like, get back on defense! And then it was like 5-on-4. Like, seriously? We lost the game, of course.
Floor slapping doesn't even get you in a good defensive stance.
At that point,
you've gone past the good defensive stance and are now off balance, and you have to come back up, and that's why the guy was able to blow past him.
You're distracted. Yeah. You're super distracted, so I don't even know what that accomplishes. It's like, oh, yeah, you're so tough that you just tapped out on the floor. Okay, great.
Right. Well, it looked cool when the white kid from Duke did it in the 90s, so let's just keep doing it forever now, apparently.
Who started it? Seriously, I want to know who started that because I want to punch him in the face.
It was
something.
Wojo.
Was it Wojo?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to punch him in the face. Not really. But.
there have been many reasons to want to punch Wojo in the face over the years. This is one of them.
Oh, my gosh. Man. Because I was like, who the hell started that thing? Because it's stupid.
Of course it is.
So we just finished talking about the basketball of March Madness or whatever. And Buddy Hield's great. Okay, whatever. Let's move on. But let's talk about a real tournament that went on here earlier in the week. So Mr. Adam Reisinger on his blog and on Twitter decided that there would be a Britney Spears song tournament. And, yes, he found 64 songs of Britney Spears
68.
And had 58.
68. We did a full – we did playing games.
Oh, my
God. I even forget the first four or whatever.
Yeah.
I hate the first four, by the way. And he found 68 songs for people to vote on. And, you know, we'll have an overall winner, like what's the most popular Britney Spears song there is. And, my gosh, I can't believe you did this, Adam. 68 songs.
It's something I've been promising slash threatening for years. I mean, this goes back in 2009, I essentially, like, followed Britney on tour. I saw her circus tour in, like, 5 different cities. And at one point, before I went to see her out in Las Vegas, which was the last show of the tour at the time, I decided to, on my blog, rank every Britney Spears song that had come out to that point. which at the time was something like just over 100 songs. And since then, she's released 2 more albums. And so I always said, like, 1 year I'm going to do a bracket of Britney Spears songs to determine the truly the best Britney Spears song ever. And this year I finally decided, yep, this
so,
is the year.
Do we have any dark horses? Has anybody?
Well, the tournament's over. It's all wrapped up.
Song and anybody. Well, anyway, I was just going to ask whether there were any dark horses that had that had made a Cinderella run or a Mickey Mouse Club run. I guess I don't know any other Disney references to Shoehorn
into Britney. There were, though shockingly, Britney's song Cinderella was not one of them. It lost in the first four. That was the biggest disappointment of the tournament for me. Well, the second biggest. I'll get to the biggest in a second. But I really wanted to use the headline, Cinderella makes Cinderella run. And it lost in the first four. So, boo to that. But two 15 seeds won in the first round. One of them, Trouble, was a real surprise to me because it was up against Circus in the first round. And what I discovered is that there is a large contingent of Britney fans that does not like the song Circus, which was a huge surprise to me.
Why do they not like it?
I don't know. It's one of my favorites, and I can't fathom why people don't like it. But the other one was really, as Ray Ray has pointed out to me, just an egregious misseeding on my part. You know, I played the role of the selection committee and had some horrible seeding here. There's two versions of the song Crazy, and one of them is the version that was on the album, and then one of them is the version that was used in the video. And I consider the video version to be the main version and the far superior version, and apparently the fans disagreed with me because the album version, which I had as a 15 seed, went all the way to the Elite 8. So
what's the difference? Because I thought I knew Britney Spears and her work, but I did not know that there were two versions of Crazy.
One goes,
stop!
Yeah, that's
the video.
That's
basically
the video
difference.
Yeah. And the video has Melissa Joan Hart and the dude from Entourage.
In the video, yes.
Yeah. And despite the dude from Entourage being there, like to me, the video version of the song, to me, it's the one that she performs in concert. It's the one that has superseded the album version, but apparently the fan base likes the album version better.
Do you suppose this was an instance of the fan base being as ignorant as I am and thinking, oh no, Crazy, that's a good song, I'm gonna vote for Crazy?
I think so, and that's part of me wanted to just have Crazy represented by one spot in the bracket, but I did the same thing with the song Boys, where there's two versions. There's the album version, and then there's the co-ed remix with Pharrell. And I feel like that one, because there's an additional artist on the remix, everyone sort of knows, okay, there's two separate versions.
Right, right.
But with Crazy, I probably could have just put one in there, made it like a 4 seed to compromise, and, you know, it probably would have gone just as far. I really don't think that anyone was upsetting any of the 1 seeds, and that certainly was the case. They all made the final 4, so.
But see, here's the thing, like, my friend, cause we had the Now, he buys like all the Now music CDs for some reason. I think he saw it on my Instagram. But, he didn't even know that the original version of You Drive Me Crazy, existed. Like, he didn't know. Like, he needed a Stop remix.
Yeah.
So I guess in that aspect, like, you know, I guess the 15th seed makes sense. But at the same time, it's like, but the people that knew it, it's like, it shouldn't be this low.
Yeah, because it wasn't the one that was on the radio. It wasn't the one in the video. Like, unless you had the album, which a lot of people did, obviously, it sold, like, 20 million copies. But it wasn't the version.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Moore from CBSSports.com. Listen to Ray Ray's Fundamental as much as you can, as often as you can, because it's awesome, he's awesome, the NBA is awesome, and you are awesome. Have a great day.
There are a few songs that I like here. Like I thought "Give Me More" was seated really low, like 10th seed. Yeah,
I cannot separate the song "Give Me More" from the disastrous VMA performance.
Right, because that was the time when she had like a huge meltdown, and then "Give Me More" came out.
Yeah,
that was the first song that came out since her that period of life. Yeah, yeah,
and so it's. As a song itself, it probably should have been seated higher, but it's just, it's, that performance just, it taints it forever.
Mm-hmm. You just can't separate it, yeah, so.
But it did pull the first round upset.
It's Britney, bitch.
It won that 7-10 matchup, though I guess, you know, technically college basketball people would tell you, oh, 7-10 isn't really an upset, it has to be 5 seeds different, like, whatever.
There are rules, Mr. Reisinger.
Yeah. But then it lost to Lucky in the second round. And it's funny because a friend of the podcast, Kristen Ledlow, her favorite Britney song is Lucky. And so she was pimping hard early in the bracket for Lucky to win it all. Mm-hmm. But Lucky had the misfortune of being the 2 seed in the region where Toxic was the 1 seed.
# blame Ray Ray.
Not so lucky after all, is it?
Exactly.
See, Reisinger really disagrees with me on this one, but my favorite Britney song is Sometimes. So, it was really tough when it was going against Vivian one more time in the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
It was really tough. I was like, oh, this is totally going to lose now to Vivian one more time. And Vivian one more time is probably like my number 2 song. So,
if we were just doing videos, I feel like Sometimes would have at least been a 2 seed. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a much better video than it is a song.
I feel you, yeah. So, what is your favorite song, favorite Britney song, Jacoby?
It's a tie between the 2 songs that made it to the title match.
Ah!
Because one, I mean, Toxic is the greatest music video ever made. and I will... Especially if it sort of guided you through a formative period in your development as an adult with an adult or with adult feelings. Baby One More Time. I mean, that is my go-to karaoke jam. And
yes, it is.
I say this without ego, but man, I crush it. It is such a great song. and it doesn't suffer from the same fatal flaw that Oops I Did It Again has, which is Oops I Did It Again has like a minute long like instrumental break or no. It like its chorus, they repeat the chorus like 4 or 5 times at the end. And you're just like, oh, I guess I'm going to sing this part again, and I'm going to do it again. It's like it's like 4.5 minutes long. But maybe one more time, you're just in and out, you get your little key change, like it's glorious. So that it is without flaw.
Yeah, so was this the expected winner for you, Reisinger?
Oh, definitely. Toxic? I mean, Toxic is my personal favorite Britney song.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's okay. Not like I rigged the bracket for it. You know, there were four one seeds, all of which were fully capable of winning this. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't surprised at all that the four one seeds made it, and I wasn't surprised that it was Toxic versus Baby One More Time in the final. It's funny because when I first put up the voting for the final, Toxic took a huge lead, and that kind of surprised me. I really expected that to be close, and then it ended up being pretty close in the end, but Toxic came through, and it really is, it's the seminal music video, it's peak Britney, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because it's probably the most coverable Britney song. Like, you can do it in just about any musical style, and it still sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Now I want to hear, like, a heavy metal Toxic. Because I'm telling you, it would work. It would absolutely
work. It probably will.
Work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the first Britney song you heard, guys? Because I remember my brother taking home a demo CD of Britney Spears. Like, I think it was, what was that? I Was Born to Make You Happy. What's the first song I heard?
No, wow. It was Baby One More Time. Because it was a bonus track on the Backstreet Boys CD.
Really?
And it came with like a Backstreet Boys introduction, like, hey guys, thanks for listening to our album. We want to introduce you to our label mate, Britney Spears. We know you're gonna love her. Like, you know, here's her first song. And
correct.
And it's funny because I had a friend in college that this shows you how old I am. That I was in college by the time Britney Spears was a thing.
Yep.
That had the Backstreet Boys CD, and we were, you know, hanging out in her room, and she said, "Oh, you got to listen to this," and she played the track for me, and I'm like, "This is the best thing ever," and like I was hooked right from there.
Right.
And of course, when you're a 19-year-old in college and listening to Britney Spears, it was like, oh, you're so creepy, you know, you're creeping out on this, you know, 12-year-old girl. And I had to keep pointing out to people that Britney Spears and I are essentially the same age. Like, we're literally a year and a half apart in age difference. And it's like, guys, I understand that while most of her audience is like 12-year-old girls, she's not. She's very clearly not. She's based, like, if I came into the dorm with a girl Britney Spears' age and she wasn't Britney Spears, no one would even look twice.
No, they'd be like, congrats.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I was 20 when Baby One More Time came out. So it's like, at the time, I hate to be like a creep or whatever, or sounding like one at least, but it's like, we just found out that Britney Spears was like 17 at that point, so we're just like, oh my god, I can't wait to switch until she turns 18.
I remember the internet's Britney turns 18 countdown, because that was a thing.
The internet was a weird place back then.
Yeah.
Not that it's not weird now, but it was, we had issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we totally did. It's like, I'm sure there were some sites out there saying, oh, we can't wait till Selena Gomez turns 18 or whatever.
Yeah. Assuredly, yes. That was happening. Yeah.
Yes. But what was your first song, Jacob?
I remember when Baby One More Time's video first came out. Speaking of videos you'll never forget, that one. I mean, like, she was 16 when it came out, but like I was 17, so it was fine.
Right.
I'm not going to say, like, I was, because back then I didn't, like Britney Spears. I'm like, oh, yeah. Because I was listening to, like, Insane Clown Posse at that point. But I recognized the pop value of Ms. Spears, and her music has aged a whole lot better than a whole lot of the late 90s pop. Like, if you look at the Billboard charts from back then, and you're like, and you start like trying to find songs that you would want to listen to again. Like 80% of them, it's like, oh god, like Harvey Danger is not a good example because that song will last forever. But like, oh, it's Fastball. Oh no. but Britney's stuff holds
but even,
up.
But even compared to
well.
Like her, compared to like her teen pop peers, like how much classic Christina Aguilera or Jessica Simpson, or Mandy Moore, or Willa Ford, or any of those people, does anyone listen to now? Compared to, like, classic Britney. Like, people still listen to to Baby One More Time and Born to Make You Happy and Oops, I Did It Again and all that stuff. And like, Christina's stuff in particular, her first album has aged really poorly.
Like, Genie in the Bottle?
Genie in the Bottle is so bad.
It's terrible. Love you, X-Tina, but, oh. Yeah, that's Genie music. Okay, that makes sense.
I was gonna say that, I remember, Adam Jacoby had a Facebook status update where he had, like, Every Morning by Sugar Ray in his head.
Yeah, Sugar Ray was a thing back then, too. Sure was.
And then a couple days ago, like, I was playing my 90s Pandora, and then Every Morning came on my Pandora. I'm like, oh, my God, why?
And, like, I want to make this clear, because I'm not sure it was clear. I haven't listened to that Sugar Ray song in probably 15 years. There's no reason for it to have been in my head. None. There it was.
It just came on in your head, and it's like, oh, it's morning. Every morning. Oh, no! You know? Is that what happened?
I don't know how it happened, because if I knew how, I would make it unhappen.
Mm-hmm. So now I gotta, like, so I actually, like, put that on Twitter. It's like, oh, yeah, so Every Morning was playing my Pandora, and then now people hate me because I put it in their heads. Mm-hmm. So,
and that's not what I was trying to do. Like, it was a crisis for me because I was at work, and I'm not used to being in situations where I'm not allowed to put on music. Because, you know, that's whenever there's a song in your head and you don't want it there, you just play something else, and that works.
Right.
But, like, you can't do that in an office where, like, everybody's sharing the same space. It's rude. People have things to do.
Yeah, so,
So just stayed there in my head for like, an entire morning. Every morning! Yeah.
That's so unfortunate.
It was the worst. That's what, I was literally, like, sincerely having a miniature breakdown. That's why I went to Facebook with it. I wasn't trying to inflict my pain on other people. I was saying, how do I make this go away?
Oh, man. See, now I have to play Every Morning for the break song. Just so everyone else can hear it besides us.
You're a bad man, Ray Ray.
Yes, I am. So,
play Ray Ray.
It's Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff, and I was once on the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast. Once. That was enough.
Every morning there's a halo hanging from the corner of my girlfriend's four-post bed. I know it's not mine, but I'll see if I can use it for the weekend or a one-night stand. Couldn't understand.
Yeah, well, let's talk NBA really quick, where the Warriors continue to dominate. Spurs decided they're going to sit one game out last night, which is we're recording this on Sunday. But, the Warriors are 65-7, and they're playing today against the Sixers.
At home.
Which is not an automatic, because the last time the Warriors and the Sixers played, it took like a Harrison Barnes 3, basically at the buzzer to win it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the Warriors only have to go 8-2 to break the record in the last 10 games. Will they do it?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Let's not forget though that they had the Spurs twice in the last week of the season.
And, yeah, and then the Grizzlies twice.
And the Grizzlies twice.
The Grizzlies aren't even, like, I don't understand how they're still winning games. They're not a functional NBA team anymore.
No, they're not. And yet.
They lost Marc Gasol for the season. Basically, the only functional players left on the Grizzlies are, like, Zach Randolph, Matt Barnes. That's not functional. Wait a minute.
He's astonishingly dysfunctional.
Zach Randolph isn't even playing right now. He's out hurt.
Is he hurt? Because last time I saw...
Their starting lineup for their last game was Jordan Farmar, Tony Allen, Matt Barnes, Jamichael Green, and Chris Anderson.
So basically the Sixers.
This is a team that is somehow going to be in the playoffs and like the 5 seed in the West.
Didn't Tony Allen go like 12 for 12 recently in the game?
I mean, it was against the Lakers, but yeah.
But still.
Yeah, no, it counts.
Yeah. And besides, the Lakers beat the Warriors earlier this season.
That game is going to be one that we're going to look... I mean, we look back on it now and are like, how did it happen? But like 20 years from now, you know, Jonathan Abrams, who will still be writing, hopefully, will write this epic oral history on the time the horrible, worst Lakers team ever beat the 75-win Warriors.
Beat the dog mess out of them, no less.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a whooping...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when everything was working, I guess, but you see, the Warriors, they lost games that are pretty, like, they're mostly pretty random, like the Pistons and the Bucks was a schedule loss, really. The Mavericks, the Blazers, you know, so.
I think that's why I see them breaking the record, and that's why I see them not only breaking it, but, well, I guess, it'll really come down to that last San Antonio and Memphis game, because they end with San Antonio, then Memphis, then San Antonio, then Memphis again.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if they get 73 against Memphis on April 9th, I don't see them making a big push on April 10th and April 13th for more wins.
Right.
But at this point, like, they've admitted publicly that they want this record. And... so that's what gives them the focus that they've lacked at times against teams like coming up. They've got Philadelphia, they've got Washington, they've got Minnesota on the schedule still. Like, some of these teams that have played them close and even beaten them that shouldn't have, it's really because of a lack of focus. Like, they go into these games, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, we're the Warriors, we're gonna win, and oh, suddenly they're not winning, and it's, once you're, you know, 20, 30 minutes into a game, and you haven't ramped up the effort, it's hard to suddenly just flip a switch and kick it on and be like, okay, well, now we're going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they're going to have that problem because, like I said, they want this record, and so they're not going to risk a slip-up against Philadelphia or against Washington or even against Utah. Or, you know, and then they've got Boston and Portland. Portland beat them earlier this year, but that was another one of those games where they just sort of they went into it thinking, okay, well, we're going to cruise. It's first game after the All-Star break. Shouldn't be a problem. And they just weren't focused, and they lost.
Mm-hmm.
Not to take anything away from Portland, because Portland is a pretty good team, and Damian Lillard can go off like he did in that game. But, like, okay, they play Minnesota on April 5th. They just had a game against Minnesota where they were, you know, they were, like, tied in the, you know, with a minute left or something, and they easily could have lost that game. So now they're going to be extra focused against Minnesota, and... you know, that'll get them to 71.
Mm-hmm.
Does it seem to you guys a little bit that Stephen Curry's starting to come back to earth a little bit?
I would say so, but only by the standard of, like, how ridiculous he was early in the season.
Right, but...
like, he's still having, you know, even if you just took the level he's on now, he's still having one of the best seasons ever. It's just not, like, supernova over anything that anyone else has done. Like, it's comparable to the best seasons of Jordan and Wilt and guys like that. Whereas, you know, if he had kept up his pace from early in the season, it would have been like, man, this is, like, how do you ever stop this?
Right. Because it used to look like he was, you know, playing a different sport than everybody else. No, I mean, because basketball is predicated on the notion that long jump shots are difficult. And
right,
he's
right.
Like, nope. This is actually easy, and you can't stop me. La la la. But you know, he's only hitting 32% of his threes in the last 5 games, which is, you know, sort of normalish. So if he's trending down just a little bit, right as they head into the playoffs, like maybe I'm just looking for a reason to think that. The Warriors won't go 15-0 through the playoffs. That's entirely possible, but I don't know, like, it sort of feels like they might have peaked a little too early.
Oh, I think the Spurs game where Curry only scored like 14 points,
uh-huh.
that had a lot to do with, I guess, his slump or whatever. That was like his worst shooting game of the season, I believe.
Probably.
Yeah. So I think that definitely helped his trending down, I guess. But in the meantime, like, they're still winning games. Like, they haven't lost since then, so I don't know.
I do feel like that game, more than any single Warriors loss this season, gave anyone that is hoping the Warriors won't just cruise through the playoffs and make it a formality, that game gave people hope. Because not only did the Spurs beat them, but they stifled them. Like, the other games the Warriors have lost, like, they've still, I mean, like, the Lakers game is just an aberration. You just have to completely throw that out. The game makes no sense. But the Portland game, they still scored 100. The Detroit game, they scored 95. You know, the Dallas loss was another weird one, but they scored 91. And in most of those games, they were playing without guys. And yeah, in the San Antonio game, they were playing without Iguodala, who I think in these recent games that they've been without him, like, people have realized even more how important he is to the team.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, San Antonio not only winning that game, but holding them to 79 points and holding Curry to 14 and 1 for 12 shooting, like, it gave you this sense, like, maybe San Antonio is honestly as good as their record reflects. Like, I mean, they're 59-10. It's highly unlikely that they win out, or, you know, or what are they now? They're 61-12, so they could win 70, but it's unlikely they do that. But they're still going to finish with like 67, 68 wins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's ridiculously good. Like, all-time great type of record. And we've just sort of been dismissing them because Golden State is blowing away the field. And then suddenly there's this one game, and it's like, hey, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't completely dismiss the possibility that a San Antonio-Golden State series will be close.
Do you think it's been easier to dismiss San Antonio because they haven't been on TV nearly as much as the Warriors have? Because they, or at the very least, national television, you know, your ESPNs, your TNTs. Because, I mean, we've been able to watch the Warriors, what, 20, 30 times this year? And I'm very well aware that the Spurs are doing great, but I don't often get a chance to see them play that well because they'll be on TV for like Christmas and stuff, but if they're just playing the Pelicans, ESPN's not picking that one up. So, I don't know, it's easier to put together a great season under everybody's nose when you're not on national television all the time for people to watch it. So I feel like that's what's going on with San Antonio, because by the numbers, they're having a top 10, top 15 NBA season of all time. They're most of the teams that have won NBA championships, the Spurs are playing better than right now. So but they're decidedly the second best team in the NBA. It honestly might be, because that's what Cleveland found out. You know, all of that hype about Dellavedova being the Curry stopper? Nope. Not even close.
Yeah.
But you want that little article of faith to be like, well, maybe we've got the secret weapon all this time, because if you say, well, there's nothing we're going to be able to do about that guy, when that's the case 90% of the time, then, you know, it's hard to get amped up as a fan. And this all sounds like I'm rooting against Golden State, and I'm not at all. I'm just rooting for competitive series.
We're just trying to find ways to break down the Warriors somehow, but, you know, so far it's really not working, except for that one game against the Spurs, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's like the glimmer of hope right now for any competitive series against the Warriors, really, because right now, let's talk about Cleveland really quick. It's like LeBron James is making all this noise on social media about unfollowing the Cavs and, you know, subtweeting or whatever. And it's like, to me, it seems like all white noise until the playoffs come around, don't you think? Don't you think, guys?
Cleveland,
like,
Cleveland just looks and acts like a team that is so over all of this season and just can't wait to get eliminated and go home and just get a full do-over. And it literally, it might not happen until the finals. And they might even somehow, despite themselves, find a miracle way to win a championship this year. But they just look like they don't want to go through this at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even like last night's game, like, you want to be able to take positive signs out of it. And first, I mean, it was against the Knicks, so it's not, you know, like they crushed anyone good. But they came out and they dominated from start to finish. And then you realize that they did it without Kyrie Irving. And the biggest on-court problem for them this year has been that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love just do not fit in any way. People always talk about the overlap between LeBron and Love because people are like, oh, LeBron should be a four, and Love is a four, and they play the same position. The bigger problem has been Kyrie and Love. Kevin Love was having a great season until Kyrie Irving came back from injury.
Yeah.
And Kyrie came back and just Kevin Love stopped being good. And I don't know whether it's that Kyrie, the way that he distributes, he doesn't look for Love, or they put Love in different places on the court when Kyrie is the main ball handler versus LeBron. You know, I haven't spent too much time breaking down the film to see what the source of the problem is. But you look at the numbers, and it's clear that the problem is those two together on the court just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe, so you can't take any positive from a 20-point win over the Knicks, and then you extra can't take any positive from it because after the game, J.R. Smith is taking pictures courtside with Miley Cyrus, and you're just like, oh, this is just not going to end well in any way. I'm surprised that it's 12 hours later, and we still haven't heard anything horrible.
Well, I think a big part of it is in the Cleveland offensive sets where they try to get Kevin Love open for the long shots is sort of away from where Kyrie's strengths as a ball handler go. And so as a result, you find Irving, but, you know, he still needs to distribute to make the offense work, but, you know, he doesn't have his big weapon from the perimeter right where he needs him. So it's basically like he's looking for Love in all the wrong places.
I should have seen that coming, and yet I didn't.
I know. But the thing is, it's like they're probably going to make the finals, but for Cavs, it's championship or bust anyway, right? It's like, There's no other way it's gonna end, and you know, and if LeBron leaves Cleveland, it's gonna be such a disaster.
That city might not stand. if he leaves again, oh my goodness!
If he leaves, and then you have the Republican National Convention there the same summer,
Jesus, like, man,
it's just asking for trouble. And there's all these people saying that, oh, there's no way that LeBron could leave Cleveland again. It would ruin his legacy. For people for whom that is the case, LeBron's legacy is already ruined.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're already like, oh, he's a loser, he's a ring chaser, he left Cleveland, he can only win with Wade. So him leaving again isn't going to change that.
Yeah.
Yes, the Cleveland fans who re-embraced him would re-hate him.
Yes, and that would be like rupturing your Achilles a second time. It's not coming back.
Right.
It doesn't matter what you do. That is all done forever now.
But I also think that there would be a small contingent of Cleveland fans that would look at LeBron leaving again and look inside themselves and be like, you know what? This might be our fault. Maybe the problem isn't LeBron. Maybe the problem is Cleveland.
Internalizing self-hatred like that is classic Cleveland fan behavior. That is entirely possible.
It's killing me now because I have no actual connection to Cleveland. I've only been there to see basketball games. I have no family there. I have no friends from there other than people I've met through basketball. So I have no reason to care about Cleveland other than sports. And yet I've, you know, hitched my wagon to LeBron for a solid, you know, like 14 years now. And now RG3 is in Cleveland, and I fell in love with RG3 as a football player when he because that was my team, and they ruined him, and now he's going to Cleveland. Like, I had so much hope going into this offseason that he was going to go to Denver, and it would totally revitalize his career. He'd be playing with a great offensive line, a great defense, and now he's going to Cleveland, and I totally get the whole factory of sadness thing now, because that's really what it is. Like, I just saw that headline, and it made me sad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was having a perfectly fine day, and I saw RG3 to Cleveland, and I was just like, aww.
By the way, besides LeBron, who calls it the land?
No one.
Nobody.
No one does, right? No. Oh, God. It's irritating.
LeBron is basically trying to make the land happen, like Lacey Chabert tried to make Fetch happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's just, you know, everyone on the planet is Regina George yelling at him and being like, stop trying to make the land happen. It's not going to happen.
Well, there's so many lands. You know, like,
I know.
Cleveland wasn't even like the first by a long shot.
Right.
It would be like, I might be able to go for it if it was like Switzerland, like if he had started playing for Zurich after a nervous breakdown or something. I don't know if that's a thing. The thing with Cleveland, it's the mistake by the lake. Its connection to water and not land is what makes it distinctive.
Oh, man. Okay, so part of me wants this to happen where a super team can happen or whatever with Paul and Anthony and, you know, all playing in one team. I do want to see it, though. I do want to see it happen where they play for a sad franchise, like, say, the Wolves or the Sixers. What are the chances of this happening?
I mean, structurally, it could happen this offseason. Like, all that needs to happen is, you know, the Clippers trade CP3 for Kyrie, and the Knicks trade Melo for Love, and Wade signs in Cleveland, you know, for the mid-level or something. But, like, functionally, that's not going to happen, and realistically, there's the only chance of this ever happening is those guys getting together at the end of their careers, and the problem is the end of their careers aren't going to line up. Like,
right.
Wade and Melo are much closer to the end of their careers than Paul and LeBron are. And so it's like, if LeBron still feels like he has championship window open, does he say, like, okay, well, I'm going to team up with a fading Melo and a fading Wade and a Chris Paul who's never won anything to try and get one more championship? Like, that's just, it doesn't make sense. But so much of what LeBron has done in his career hasn't made sense, so yeah, sure, this is probably going to happen.
I just want to have it to a sad franchise, although Cleveland does count as a sad franchise.
No, see, what would be the most Cleveland would be this happening for a sad franchise like the Sixers, who just abandoned the process to do this, or, you know, like the Pelicans, who, you know, have killed Anthony Davis by this point in this hypothetical timeline, and that team somehow winning a championship against Cleveland in the finals. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be the peak. Would be this LeBron super team going to, like, Utah for some reason.
I was just about to say
Cleveland
Utah
in the championship.
The Nuggets.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, something random, basically, you know?
Well, the Nuggets would be great, though, because it would be Melo's homecoming, and Melo gets the homecoming championship that LeBron never got.
Oh, God.
Oh, there's that as well.
That would be just a kick right in the LeBrons.
Hey, guys, just want to remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show on RareRay.net as well as Stitcher, and this is being syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. Cool. Awesome. Back to the podcast.
Oh, man.
So I hate to ask this, because it's only March 27th at the moment, but what are the chances of LeBron leaving Cleveland? Where are we at? 50-50? 60-40? What's up?
Other Adam, do you even want to touch this with a 10-foot pole at this point?
Yeah, and I'll incur the wrath of the Cavs fans on Twitter because whatever, I know how to use my mute button. Look, if I had to put a number on it today, I'd say it's 50-50. Like, and it's not even like a 50-50 based on like what I'm hearing from people. It's that LeBron could wake up at any moment and just be like, yep, I'm done. Or he could wake up at any moment and be like, gotta win one for the land. Like, it's literally entirely on the whim of whatever he's feeling that morning. And we can spend all the time we want reading into his subtweets and, you know, listening to his post-game quotes and watching his body language, but it's literally just going to be some morning in July he's going to wake up and be like, I'm coming back and we're going to revamp this and we're going to do this. Or he's going to wake up and be like, nope, coming down to South Beach, major key, another one, DJ Khaled, Snapchat, on it. Like, that's just how it's going to happen. Like, it's there's no in-between there. It's one or the other, flip a coin, and you can't lean in either direction on either one, I feel like.
So it's either Cleveland or Miami again.
It's Cleveland or, you know, I mean, Miami seems like the obvious, you know, like, he'll go back to Miami because that's where it worked out for him. But, you know, who knows? Maybe he tricks Golden State into letting him come. Maybe he's like, hey, Coach Pop, you know, could you do for me what you did for Duncan and extend my career by 30 years with some sort of unnatural sorcery? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, maybe he goes and joins the Knicks. Like, again, he could wake up and decide anything. And if you're picking Cleveland versus a specific team, you pick Cleveland. But if you're picking Cleveland versus the field, like, I feel like it's 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He decides to go to the Philippines or to China to play basketball.
I feel like the more likely scenario is that he stays in Cleveland and that Kyrie and Love are gone this summer.
I would believe that because it's not like he's ever going to get more of a talent base around him if he decides to manufacture a move to somewhere else, which isn't to say that he's going to want both Kyrie and Kevin around, but I think he's going to understand that they have a lot of value as movable pieces, and if you move one of them or even both of them, you've still got enough around you with Mozgov, who is also expendable, and Thompson, who looks like a worthwhile investment, that you can start to, and also, of course, the Curry killer himself, Matty Dellavedova. you know what I mean? Like, you still have stuff to work with there. It's not like the end of his Miami run where it was just, well, there's LeBron and there's Wade and then it's just sadness. Shane Battier, 35 minutes, let's do it. Now that, I hope Mike Miller is still in one piece. You know, it's not that kind of hopeless situation. He's still got a lot. I feel like the worst case has come true. They shouldn't have traded Wiggins for Love, right? We can now say that between, one, the personnel swap, and then sort of mortgaging their draft position in the future. That was a mistake, right?
I mean, it's weird because I don't know if they get to the finals last year with Wiggins instead of Love, even though Love got hurt in the playoffs. Like, I just don't think that they're the same team. They probably don't make those moves that they made for like J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert if they've kept Wiggins. But like, it just seems like they were really thinking that they were going to win a championship either last year or this year or next year, and that Andrew Wiggins wasn't going to be ready to be a contributor to a championship team. And he's not. He's turned into a good player, mm-hmm. and he's definitely improved, and he's doing good things in Minnesota, but he's not a contributor, a top-level contributor to a championship team type player yet.
Sure.
But then what ends up happening is this Golden State team goes supernova and essentially blocks them from winning a championship. It certainly seems like. And now it's like, man, if we had Wiggins, we'd have a plan beyond these few years, and that we would have a guy who would be rising right as LeBron is falling, and we might have stretched this window to 6 years instead of 3 years.
Right.
And the funny thing is that when LeBron James returned to Cleveland and he was talking about players and stuff, he never really mentioned Andrew Wiggins' name.
That ended up clearly being preordained because it was very clear from his letter that he had no intention of playing with Andrew Wiggins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I think also the thing of it is that in Miami their best lineup was when LeBron was the second biggest guy on the floor.
Yep.
And Bosch was your quote five. But in Cleveland, they have just absolutely loaded up on size. And not just like in Miami where you'd be like, hey, Eric Dampier, come sit on our bench. but a ton of minutes going to a ton of guys who weigh a metric ton. And that's, you're gonna get run off the court by a team like Golden State. And I get that you can't always just base your entire personnel strategy around one team that you might not face because, hey, you know, the Spurs are still there. But at the same time, LeBron in his 30s trying to play the three is not as good as LeBron in his 30s trying to play the four. It's just not nearly as effective. But I don't know how you get away from that without making a ton of moves and basically making the Cavaliers look like a totally different team than what they are right now. And I agree, Andrew Wiggins is not a championship level player at this point. But at the same time, you know, Robert Horry won 6 championships. And right. He's not, you know, there's only, if he were on Orlando the entire time, you know, doing the same things but for the Magic over those same years, you wouldn't be like, hey, there's a championship player. You'd be like, well, that there's a forgettable power forward Robert Horry, I guess. You know, so maybe if you put Wiggins in the same locker room as LeBron, and, you know, maybe even, I guess, Kyrie. But, you know, if you put him in a situation where the standards are, you got to be ready to play for a championship, you got to be, you know, bringing your A-game 82 times a year from the get-go, that maybe he's a different player than, you know, hey, go chill out in Minneapolis and start to get good at this. By the way, you're going to lose 50 games every year. But, you know, get good at it all the same. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, like I think there's a nurture aspect to NBA development that goes beyond just, well, he's 6'9" and he can jump out of the gym. He'll be good. You know.
What's interesting to me is because I agree with you on the whole LeBron should be spending more time at the four thing, but the Cavs' 4 best lineups this year all have LeBron, Kevin Love, and Tristan Thompson on the floor at the same time.
Really?
It just seems to defy common sense.
Yeah.
but what's interesting to me there is that it's Tristan Thompson at center, not Timothy Mozgov. And Mozgov was such a big part of their team last year.
Mm-hmm.
And this year it's essentially like their best lineup has, instead of a small forward, a power forward, and a center, has 3 power forwards. Which is weird. But mm-hmm. Hey, it's doing okay for them. And I just go back to a lot of those lineups have Dele on the floor instead of Kyrie Irving. And it's just, again, that seems to defy common sense that they're better with Matthew Dellavedova, but the numbers seem to bear that out. So we'll see how it all plays out in the postseason. Because for all this hand-wringing and stuff, they're still the best team in the East, and they're still the favorite to go to the finals, so...
They're the best in the East by a pretty considerable margin. Like I know that from a wins and losses perspective, it's what, 4 games, but in terms of a team that is ready to make a deep run, you know, if as long as they get past, I think the Pistons are the 8th seed, and the Pistons are young enough to be dangerous, but as long as they get, you know, everything working in a playoff environment, like, then yeah, I think they're going to go to the finals. So and I think that once that happens, all the things that, you know, sort of get on LeBron's nerves start to evaporate a little bit, and he's like, oh, wait, yeah, that's right. No, I'm really good at basketball. Okay,
yeah.
Everything's fine. So I think that's where we're going to end up, but, you know, I still don't know if they're, you know, good enough to do anything once they get to the finals, you know, just like last year. And if they don't, which is entirely possible, I have no idea what the what the fallout's going to be, but it won't be minor.
Mm-hmm. I ask this basically every week or every podcast episode, but, like, is there really a chance that Cleveland, barring health, is going to lose in the East?
Yeah, absolutely, but it's not a good chance. I wouldn't put money on it, but,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like we all felt the same way in 2010, and they lost in the second round, so,
yeah.
You know, weird things can happen.
Yeah, like, the Raptors obviously playing really well. The Hawks have caught fire as of late, so.
And Charlotte,
of course, like, surprisingly, like, I think we are seeing, like, Linsanity Part 2 or something, because he's playing well,
mm-hmm.
and Charlotte's caught fire as well, so. We'll see how the East falls out, I guess. Oh, wow, so we spent about an hour on this thing already, so guys, go ahead and, plug your social media, plug your sites, whatever.
Do I go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't really do the Twitter.com anymore, but you can find all of the Iowa Hawkeyes collegiate sports. Because, you know, we love college basketball here at Ray Reyes Fundamental.
Yeah, we do!
But you can find that at blackheartgoldpants.com.
We miss you on Twitter, Jacoby. We really do. Yeah.
We miss our stories.
He hasn't had a story on this podcast in like 20 episodes.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Adam Reisinger. And whenever I do stupid things like a Britney Spears song bracket, it'll be linked up on there. So
follow me on Twitter at the No Look Pass. I haven't written in a while on the NoLookPass.com, just taking a break basically. But you know, I'll be running soon. And I guess that's how we're going to end it, right, Jacoby? You know what to do.
Of course. Well, you know, as always, there's no need to be bugging when it's a Ninja Turtle you're hugging.
We're out of here.
Game over, yeah!
Hashtag blame Ray Ray.
Moded.